Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about stoneflies in Glacier National Park, Savannah's Act, and an update on Potter's Field Ministries and its affiliated burger chain in Whitefish. It's Friday, November 22nd. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Montana has been awarded a $10 million federal grant to improve the health outcomes for pregnant and postpartum women in rural Montana. Kay Erickson explains.
This new program is called MOM, Montana Obstetric and Maternal Support. It's designed to improve some very dire Montana statistics.
We have the sixth highest maternal mortality rate in the nation. And for me, that has to improve.
That's Sheila Hogan, director of the state's Department of Health and Human Services. MOM is funded by a federal grant worth $10 million for 5 years. It will provide training and assistance for rural clinic providers treating high-risk pregnant and postpartum patients. The training and assistance would come through telehealth programs already in place, like Billings Clinic's Project Echo and the Eastern Montana Telemedicine Network that provide access to OB-GYN specialists, as well as ones developed to provide more immediate consultation. The grant will help fund a maternal mortality and morbidity task force to review select cases and give recommendations on preventative measures. The MOPS program is also developing simulation in motion lab trucks that will travel to rural hospitals and clinics to provide hands-on state-of-the-art skills training. The program will purchase iPads and other electronics needed for direct electronic connections and consultations. It also plans to apply for FCC funding to improve rural broadband and internet access. The University of Montana has already drafted an evaluation plan to collect and analyze the data and suggest changes to the program. Sheila Hogan.
Our goal is to set up a sustainable system that will support these women ongoing.
MOM is expected to launch early next year. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Kay Erickson.
Members of the Montana Board of Regents are voicing support for a $150,000 pay raise for the president of Montana State University to keep her from leaving for a higher-paying job at another university. The Bozeman Daily Chronicle reports Commissioner of Higher Education Clayton Christian yesterday called the offer fiscally responsible because it would be costly to conduct a national search if they had to replace Wated Cruzado. If Regents approve the raise today, Cruzado would see a nearly 49% pay increase to an annual salary of $476,524. Cruzado is in her 10th year as president of MSU, which has seen increasing enrollment at a time that other colleges are losing students. Cruzado declined to say how much money she was turning down or which university made the offer. Two stonefly species found in Glacier National Park were listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act Wednesday due to the impacts of climate change, according to a rule published by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Montana Public Radio's Nick Mott reports.
The two species depend on glacial meltwater, high up in alpine environments. But scientists estimate the famed ice masses and snowfields of Glacier National Park will be mostly gone by 2030.
These species might be some of the first that go extinct because of climate change. They are literally the polar bears of Glacier National Park.
Clint Mulfeld is a research aquatic ecologist with the United States Geological Survey. He's studied the two stonefly species for a decade and a half. Both stoneflies live deep in Glacier National Park. The Western Glacier stonefly has also been found in Grand Teton National Park and in the Absaroka Beartooth Wilderness. The meltwater Lednian stonefly has been documented in wilderness areas near Glacier and in tribal land in the Mission Mountains. Less melt, warmer water, and drought are forcing the species higher and higher in search of habitat. And now,
there's basically nowhere to go. They're at the highest elevations of stream networks in freshwater ecosystems, so it's squeeze play at the top of the continent.
Mulfeld says the stoneflies serve as barometers for the health of mountaintop ecosystems, biodiversity hotspots that scientists are still working to understand. Usually, threatened status means heightened protections for habitat, but Mulfeld says these flies live in areas that are already highly protected.
The threat's more of a global phenomenon that on the ground at the local level, managers can do very little to ameliorate.
Endangered Species Act protection also comes with more federal funding for conservation efforts. The listing process took more than a decade. The federal government was petitioned in 2007 and 2010 to provide ESA protections for the species. Then, the FWS proposed a rule in 2016 to list both species as threatened. That rule was finalized this week. I'm Nick Mott, Montana Public Radio.
One of the owners of the Colstrip power plant yesterday agreed to financially withdraw by 2025. The Billings Gazette reports a Vista Corporation, which owns 15% of Units 3 and 4, accelerated its deadline as a part of a partial settlement agreement between the utility and multiple intervening parties in its general rate case in Washington State. Avista also announced it will commit $3 million to a transition fund to become available next April for the Northern Cheyenne Tribe, Rosebud County, the town of Colstrip, and labor organizations. Avista earlier this year announced it would back out of Colstrip Units 3 and 4 in 2027, 7 to 9 years ahead of previous estimates. Meanwhile, a coalition of environmental groups filed a lawsuit in federal court in Billings this week challenging the proposed expansion of the Rosebud coal mine, which supplies coal to the Colstrip power plant. The Montana Free Press reports the groups led by the Western Environmental Law Center argue that the U.S. Department of Interior's approval of the 6,700-acre expansion in June violated the National Environmental Policy Act. They say the agency failed to adequately evaluate impacts to surface water quality, the Yellowstone River, and greenhouse gas pollution. The expansion amounts to nearly 69 million tons of coal and expands the Rosebud mine's life through 2038. The groups say the expansion is unjustified because a majority of the owners of the mine's sole customer, the Colstrip power plant, plan to back out in 2027. The groups also filed a notice of intent to sue under the Endangered Species Act, alleging the Rosebud mine expansion would harm pallid sturgeon. A U.S. Senate committee advanced two bills Wednesday that aim to beef up law enforcement's response to the missing persons crisis in Indian Country. Olivia Reingold reports.
For the second time, Savannah's Act is now on its way to the U.S. Senate floor. That's after the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs unanimously voted it and another public safety bill, the Not Invisible Act, out of committee Wednesday. Montana Senators Republican Steve Daines and Democrat John Tester are both co-sponsors of the bills and members of the committee.
Senator Tester, I'm sorry.
First of all, I just want to...
Democratic Senator John Tester broke in just before the vote to advocate for Savannah's Act, which would increase coordination among law enforcement agencies, expand what data is collected, and clarify jurisdictional boundaries when it comes to missing and murdered Indigenous people.
I think there are a lot of issues that are impacting Native American people right now. I don't know that there's anything more important than this one right now.
Native people in Montana tend to go missing at rates that outpace their share of the state population. American Indians currently account for about a fourth of all missing persons cases in the state of Montana, while only accounting for about 7% of the state population. The Senate unanimously passed Savannah's Act last year, but it was blocked in the U.S. House of Representatives by Virginia Republican Bob Goodlatte, who declined to bring it up for a vote. The committee also passed the Not Invisible Act, which would create a new position at the Bureau of Indian Affairs to coordinate prevention efforts at the federal level. Next, the committee will draft a report along with the bill. Included in that report will be the cost estimates for both measures, which the Congressional Budget Office will prepare. After that, it will be scheduled for a vote on the Senate floor. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Olivia Reingold.
Federal prosecutors announced yesterday that they arrested four Mexican citizens in Glacier County for suspected smuggling of undocumented immigrants. A fifth Mexican citizen is suspected of illegal re-entry into the country. According to a press release from the U.S. Justice Department, the five defendants were arrested Sunday, along with 14 other suspected undocumented immigrants thought to have traveled across the Canadian border. Law enforcement stopped two vehicles with the suspect suspects inside after receiving a tip about suspicious room rentals at a Cut Bank hotel over the past 6 months. Four of the defendants face up to 10 years in prison for alleged illegal transport of aliens and conspiracy to transport aliens. The fifth defendant could be fined or be put on supervised release for alleged illegal reentry. It's been a little over 3 months since Whitefish-based Pottersfield Ministries and its affiliated burger chain closed down amid allegations of psychological and emotional abuse. For the first time, workers are providing detailed documents outlining how they also worked 240-plus hours per month for as little as $300. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports the State Labor Department is investigating.
In the summer of 2017, then 18-year-old Connor Strong found himself working long hours in a Mudman Burgers food truck. He had just returned from a missions trip with Pottersfield as part of its tuition-based Ignite Missionary School.
And the food truck was brand new, and that's all I did was the food truck, and our hours were absurd. Could be reaching 90 hours a week at some point. On rare occasions, but it did happen.
Strong says he eventually worked 70 hours per week at one of Pottersfield's three Mudman Burger restaurants in the Flathead Valley for $300 per month, a $50 Safeway gift card, and shared housing in Whitefish. The ministry says it used the fast food chain as part of an internship program for returning missionary students and to raise money for international missionary trips. Shortly after the ministry and the restaurants closed their doors in July, 13 former workers, including Strong, filed wage claims with the Montana Department of Labor and Industry. The claims allege Pottersfield violated federal labor laws by asking employees to volunteer for work they otherwise were paid for, and requiring them to work more than 60 hours per week. These asks are outlined in what Pottersfield calls internship agreements, and workers call hiring documents. Through a public records request, MTPR gained access to four of the claims the state is investigating, totaling $111,000 in alleged unpaid wages. The Labor Department is investigating nine claims in all that were filed within the statute of limitations. Sharon DeMiro, who is not licensed to practice law in Montana, is Pottersfield's legal consultant.
When the claims were made, we disputed the claims.
The ministry argues most of the claimants were interns who fell under a state exemption, allowing employers to partially reimburse volunteers who are not regular employees. Pottersfield interns received regular paychecks ranging from roughly $300 to $1,500 per month and paid taxes. But DeMiro says those paychecks were stipends.
These kids were not employees. They were interns who signed up for a program and were told up front, hey, you're going to work 40 hours plus 20 volunteer hours.
It's illegal under federal law for an employer to ask employees to volunteer time doing duties they're normally paid to do. According to timesheets Pottersfield provided to the Labor Department, interns were regularly scheduled for 70-hour work weeks without explanation which hours were paid and which were volunteered. The current head of the Pottersfield Board and DeMiro acknowledged the agreements they had interns sign were legally questionable.
Unfortunately, the nonprofit ministry didn't have the fortitude to look or the foreknowledge to go seek advice of a labor attorney before they set this up, so they didn't realize that there could be a conflict if you ask someone to do volunteer hours the same place where their paycheck is earned.
According to two of the wage claims, Pottersfield sought legal counsel on the matter in early 2019 after at least 3 years of operating its internship program. It then began paying an hourly rate and limiting interns to 40-hour work weeks. Pottersfield says the internship agreements should hold up since the ministry was unaware of the law and they were willingly signed by program participants. Al Ekblad is the executive secretary of Montana Workers Union, AFL-CIO. The union is not involved in these cases, but Ekblad explains that ignorance isn't a legal defense and says the labor agreements likely won't hold up.
I do not believe under the law an individual can sign away their right to, you know, have their compensation regulated by wage and hour laws or minimum wage.
Ekblad contends that the fact that workers received regular paychecks and were issued work schedules undercuts the argument they were either volunteers or interns. It's unclear when the wage claims could be settled. Pottersfield is selling off properties and assets, with some of the proceeds earmarked for any wage claims it's liable for and to settle potential lawsuits. The ministry says its internship program benefited those who went through it by getting them ready for long hours in the missionary field. Strong, who we heard from earlier, says many were coerced into working long hours for years because they were promised all expenses paid mission trips, a cause Strong says he was dedicated to.
I just thought that would be a vessel to get me back to doing that again, was going back to Potter's Field. That never happened for me.
Instead, Strong and others spent their time working in a burger restaurant. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds Monday morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.